honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is Charlie Wilson, 93 years old, of Bakersfield, California, originally from West New York, New Jersey. And we're going to hear about what might have been Charlie's closest call in a moment, but that hometown of West New York was definitely on his mind when he visited the National World War II Memorial with Honor Flight Kern County. Gazing out at that wall of gold stars representing the more than 406,000 Americans who were killed during World War II, Charlie couldn't help but think of his childhood friend Carmen DeDio. You know, Charlie and his transport crews helped keep many wounded soldiers alive, both by evacuating them from battle zones and by delivering medical supplies to those areas. But there was nothing Charlie or anyone could do for his friend Carmen, who was killed while fighting in the Pacific with the 1st Marine Division. Honor Flight was such a powerful experience for Charlie, but he was talking about a different trip when we left off. At the CAF Air Power Museum in Midland, Texas, you said you found a C-47 that you thought you might have actually flown in during World War II?
Yeah, it says this aircraft was used in 1503rd ATC unit, the 1504th ATC unit, and I was in those two. And then they had the troop carrier or something else that listed down there, and I'm looking up saying, now, the only way I could identify that was the actual plane that I was on is if I knew what the tail number was, I could look at it and see what it was. And then there was one thing that would really verify it. I looked at the radio operator position where we had the desk down there, and I looked around to see if I could find my initials that I carved in there when I was flying.
Did you find them?
No. Somebody must have changed it. You know, it's a small desk, and it's made of wood, and that's where the key is that they have down in there to send the Morse code with. And I'm looking around there to see. I know I put it here somewhere underneath on top. You know, I couldn't find it. If I would have found it, that would have cinched it. That was the actual plane I flew in.
Wow. Well, sounds like it was pretty close.
Yeah.
And let's hear about that unit that you ended up with, the 1503rd Air Transport Command. What does that mean? What did you guys do? What were you responsible for?
Well, the Air Transport Command is what it says. Back then, if you had to move cargo, move wounded, move people, it didn't matter. You were transporting, and that's exactly what the saying said. And the symbol they had on there looks like some kind of a globe with a spear on it. But that's all it was. It was the part of the Air Force that did the transport work, the cargo carrying, the wounded carrying, and even people carrying. If they were going to get a general from here and there, just as a sidebar, every now and again, if you see on TV or you're watching your show on TV and you see the plane that MacArthur pulled in on and he gets out and the plane comes down, that's a C-54. And that's kind of like their private planes that they drive around with. So, and it was part of the Air Transport Command that furnished this type of an aircraft to these various notaries and cargo and things like that.
So how old were you when you first were sent overseas?
Yeah, 18, give and take a little.
And how many guys were on your crew? And what, were you in a C-47 then?
Yeah, C-47 was the first ones I went on. And we had a crew of one, two, three, five. And we also had the same amount on a 54. It was a five-man crew because we had the pilot, co-pilot, radio, and the chief engineer, and the cargo guy. And it turned out to be that the airplane driver, once you learn how to drive a car, you can drive an airplane, so to speak. But the cargo guy was very important. If he didn't lay out the weights of the cargo on the inside the fuselage, that plane would fly cattywampus, nose too high, tail too high, because it's amazing how the weight distribution in the fuselage can actually affect the attitude of the plane while it's flying, you know? And so he's very important. I mean, oh, yeah. Yeah, the old cargo guy, he'd go out there and make sure he'd know what the weights are, you know, for they have the weight on the cargo that they'd stencil on it, and he'd say, okay, that goes here, and he'd look it out, and he says, okay, we're ready to go. And also, that also being a cargo guy, that he also takes into account the weight of the gasoline and where it is with respect to the center of gravity of the aircraft. So the thing at least flies level, which is very important, by the way.
And what about your role? What all were you responsible for?
I was responsible for all the radio equipment on board. Now, I'm trying to think. We had the transmitter, the high-power transmitter. Then we had the radio receiver, which would take that. Then we had the, on board the planes, we had the interplane and from aircraft to ground and from aircraft to aircraft. There was a special piece of equipment for that. And then we had on board the radio compass, which is, I told you about that. That's the most, to me and the rest of the crew, that's the most important piece of equipment on board.
Well, why don't you explain to everybody listening why that is, why that made you so popular, that you had access and control of that?
This is always a small story. The radio equipment that's on board the planes that we're talking about, beacons, because I rode the beacon too, that's the other saying we had. When you're flying and you're on these long flights and there isn't much you can do, but the radio compass was the only radio equipment that would pick up broadcast, commercial broadcast bands that was like all through the United States and all various, especially in the United States, all the broadcast frequencies. So when we were flying, and you get these long flights, you know, 4 hours or more, 5 hours, and it gets awful boring up there. So I would turn on the radio compass. Not that I wanted to know where we were going. I knew where we were going. So I'm looking for a radio station I could pick up that had some programs going that we all knew about, like Tommy Dorsey playing his music, Jimmy Dorsey, Doris Day, Fibber McGee and Molly. I don't know how he kept all that stuff in that closet. Every time he'd open up the closet door, everything come pouring out, you know. And so the guys on board the plane, they all wanted to hear that kind of stuff. After all, there's nothing to do for 4 hours. I mean, you sleep a little and, you know, you get there and you make sure that your plane is going the way it's supposed to. So I'd crank in the station and I'd tell the guys, okay, switch your boxes over to compass and listen. And that's why that, surprisingly, that made me very, very popular on board that aircraft.
So you guys would be in the middle of the Pacific somewhere, and you're picking up a radio signal from, what, San Francisco or LA or something?
San Francisco. Actually, the only stations that we could get very reliably were Seattle, Washington, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Honolulu, and San Diego. They were the high-power stations. And they were about the only places that we could reach anyway. Everybody else was on the other side of the world, and I didn't understand Japanese very well. Well, but just as a sidebar on Japanese very well, the one thing I always wanted to do, but I could never find her, and that's to listen to Tokyo Rose. But I could never find out what frequency he was on. And I could have picked it up because I said I had enough equipment to cover that band. Yeah. I could just never get her.
Where was the first place you were sent to operate out of? Where would you guys go from there? And what kind of cargo were you transporting?
Well, most of the cargo that we would carry were engine parts, drums of special oils and fluids, actual drums, 50-gallon drums that you see around, medical supplies. And I don't know if I could say this over the air, but... Because it's the truth of the matter, and you could, and if I say it, it's okay. I mean, I don't think I'm breaking any rules. But the most common piece of equipment, cargo, that was asked for by most of the people that we landed at, and the cargo guys had come and unloaded, and that was toilet paper.
Well, it's kind of in thin supply in the jungle.
We got two cases for you here. Okay, that's fine. And then they offload the stuff and distribute it down. They're supposed to, some guys getting the engine parts, some of the car parts, or whatever they require, you know, to keep things flying and keep things repaired. And
all those flights in World War II, did you ever have to parachute out of a plane?
Once. Some of that ground fire shot us down. And it was in a 47, C-47.
You weren't going to tell me about that?
I didn't think about it until you said the buzzword. I got so much crap in my head, and I'm so damn old that I operate on buzzwords. You say a buzzword, and something will pop out. If you don't, nothing pops out.
Okay, so where was this that you guys got shot down?
Yeah, it was coming out of Clark Field, which is outside of Manila. Uh-huh. And ground fire, just ping, 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 ping. And I, to this day, I don't know why we had to bail. I suspect very strongly that what had happened, that the hydraulic system got shot out or something else like that. It doesn't take much to punch holes in the hydraulic lines, you know. And so all five of us got out. We just, over you go.
And where did you come down?
It was in Luzon, which is, now, if I remember rightly, I don't know the exact mileage, but Clark Air Force Base is in Manila vicinity, about maybe 70, 80 miles north of it. So it's all jungle up there still. So we come down just a little bit north of Clark Field.
But it was friendly territory?
At that time, yeah. Because the guys that were fighting in there was the 1st Cavalry. And so we come on down, and they kind of cut us loose and all that stuff and said, okay, go on home now. We saved you, you know, type attitude. But it was okay.
Is that a little scary, jumping out of an airplane because you have to?
Well, I tell you, we had to, let's put it this way, we had to abandon the aircraft. We were told to get out. It's a good thing I wasn't last out. I must have been third or fourth like that, because I remember to this day, I'm at the door, I'm looking down, and I feel somebody's booting my butt, and over I went. I'd still be up there looking at the ground.
That's a close enough call. I'm glad we covered that. But the reason I was asking if you ever jumped out of one in the war is because I know you did so more recently, because Honor Flight Kern County had a little fundraiser out in Taft, California. You actually went skydiving?
Yeah. Yeah, it was skydive. It was about 2 years ago. I was 91 when I jumped at that time. Yeah, so it had to be 2 years ago. So anyway, so the thing that happened there was that, so down we came, you know, and all pictures were taken. Oh, I mean, I tell you, everybody was there because this was unheard of. A whole bunch of old guys, okay? I was the oldest of the group. The youngest was 85 or 6, but we were old guys going to jump out of an airplane. Ah, come on. What's the matter? These guys should be home in rocking chairs, you know? So the three of us, we signed up. We said, what the hell? So we go up and we're outside of here, Taft. And just as a side issue on that one, on that day, Shannon Grove, our representative here, and Judy McCarthy, Kevin's wife, they were at that day with the rest of us there. When they saw us old guys, they said, we can do that. And so they suited up and they jumped. They really did. They jumped that day with the rest of us, you know, up in the plane.
Well, what did that feel like? I mean, not too many 91-year-olds get that thrill.
Well, it's the first step is a beaut. You know, but after that, it's just like sitting in the chair here and you got the controls of the, because it's not a regular round parachute like you had in the old days. This is a parasail. It looks like a wing, yeah. You know, and you can control the places where you're going to go as you come down. And so, but I made the perfect landing as per the book. At least they tell me this afterward. I came down. I tripped somehow or another. And it's a good thing we landed on the grass instead of the runway, because I went down on my butt and I slid down as far as you can go, just smiling and happy as I'm sliding on my butt on the grass. And they got it on picture to show me.
Well, I guess I have to ask you the million-dollar question. Which parachute jump did you enjoy more, out of a damaged airplane in World War II or out of a perfectly good airplane in 2017?
Perfectly good airplane. Well, you know, mainly the thing was is that the guy that, I don't know what you call him. I call him a driver, my parachute driver, okay?
Yeah.
He's on your back.
Tandem jump, yeah.
It was a tandem jump. So he says, before we go up, he says, now the parachute's got two handles hanging off on the end of the wing now. You can steer the parachute with it. You want to go to the left, just pull down on the left one a little bit, and it'll go that way as you're coming down. You want to go to the right, go like so, you know. And so I'm playing with it. I like that. I'm having a good time with this thing up there, you know. But boy, what a landing I made.
And we have some links to coverage of that then 91-year-old Charlie Wilson skydiving a couple years ago, linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, and it's on the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. You might even recognize another one of the vets who jumped that day, David Crawford, who's also shared his story here on the radio. So that was a couple years ago, Charlie, but I know one thing you continue to do today is go to local schools and help educate young people about World War II. So when they ask you, what's World War II and why does it still matter today? How do you answer that?
Well, I try to bring it down to their level, and I say why it matters is because if I didn't go, or people like me didn't go, you wouldn't be sitting there asking me that question. I think that something like that gets them to think a little bit more about it. It's not too deep, but they can understand. I think they understand what I just said.
Well, I'm pretty sure we all understand what you just said, and I want to make sure I say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for sharing your unique story with us today, and keep sharing it with all those young people. Who knows? Maybe they'll tell you they heard you on the radio, and they went and tried your special Depression-era coffee trick. Charlie Wilson, 93 years old. And that's all the time we have today, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.